This report says, and that's what the Taliban have confirmed, Mullah Omar was living safely for almost 13, 14 years.
India, Pakistan, and Afghanistan continue to deal with terrorism and a ghost of its past. It's Tuesday, March 12th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, meditation to ease Rohingya minds. A movie tells war survivor stories. Endangered species in the crosshairs. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with India's Foreign Secretary in Washington Monday and told him that the United States stands with India in fighting terrorism. After their meeting, the State Department said the two discussed the importance of bringing to justice those responsible for a suicide attack on an Indian paramilitary convoy claimed by Pakistan-based militants. The State Department said the diplomats spoke of the urgency of Pakistan taking meaningful action against terrorist groups operating on its soil. Last month, a suicide bomber killed 40 Indian paramilitary troops in a convoy in the disputed Kashmir region. A Pakistan-based militant group claimed responsibility for that violence. New Delhi has vowed to punish Islamabad for sheltering the militants, saying the Indian Army chief has been given a free hand to take whatever action is required. Pakistan rejects Indian charges of playing a role in the February attack and maintains the militant group has long been outlawed as a part of counter-extremism measures. Meanwhile, a frankly bizarre story comes today from Afghanistan. Officials there are strongly rejecting a new American investigative report that claims the founder of the Taliban, Mullah Muhammad Omar, spent his final years in Afghanistan, not in neighboring Pakistan. Washington and Afghan officials have long asserted that Omar took refuge in Pakistan after a U.S.-led military coalition dislodged the Taliban from power. The New York-based Zamia Center says that's wrong, but Afghans are calling the report delusional. VOA's Ayaz Ghul has been following the claims. He spoke with our Doug Bernard.
Well, you know, this is the first time that someone has gone and investigated exactly what was the fate of Mullah Omar, you know, the founder, the founding leader of the Taliban. Because after the 9/11 invasion of Afghanistan led by the United States, the Taliban was toppled from, you know, they were dismissed from power in Kabul, and these Taliban, they just melted away in the population, and then they started insurgency. But the predominant view was that Mullah Omar fled to Pakistan, took refuge there, and that's when the operation began in search of all the Taliban leaders inside Afghanistan and with the help of Pakistani security forces on this side of the border.
So for a long time, I guess it's been the accepted wisdom that Mullah Omar fled into Pakistan and, you know, really lived out the remainder of his days there. But now comes a new report that says, no, not only did he not flee to Pakistan, he never actually set foot in the country.
That's true, and that raises a lot of questions now about the almost now 18-year-old war in Afghanistan against terrorism and against the Taliban. And that's what this report is also asking now, questions that there were so many claims made about this invasion and how they were, you know, the American and allied forces were gaining victories against the Taliban. If the top leader of this group was just living and hiding in a place which was just a few miles away from a major American military base in the southern Zabul province. And that's where this report says, and that's what the Taliban have confirmed, Mullah Omar was living safely for almost 13, 14 years.
Is this the reason why the official response from the government of Afghanistan seems to be as touchy as it is, or is there something else going on here?
No, it is quite an embarrassing situation for the Afghan government, because they are the ones who announced in 2015, in the July of 2015, that according to credible information, as they put it, Mullah Omar was under treatment in a hospital in Pakistani city of Karachi, and that after prolonged illness, he died in that hospital. This announcement by the Afghan government sort of derailed that effort of initiating peace talks with the Taliban. And since then, nobody has questioned, no journalist, no research group questioned this narrative. So this is the first time that someone has actually put together a report.
VOA's Ayaz Gul speaking from Islamabad with VOA Asia's Doug Bernard. The Zomia Center report comes at a time when the United States is engaged in extensive peace talks with the Taliban in Qatar to seek a negotiated settlement to the Afghan war. Omar's close associate and co-founder of the Taliban, Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar, is supervising a team of insurgent leaders holding talks with American officials. The dialogue has been continuing for the past 2 weeks in Doha, but both sides are tight-lipped about the discussions. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. The United States says no phased approach to North Korea denuclearization. China and Vietnam regularly clashing at sea despite diplomacy. Woman suspected in assassination of Kim Jong-nam released. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more with photos and video on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Approximately 1 million Rohingya refugees live in Cox's Bazar camp in Bangladesh, and according to the United Nations, the majority of them are women and girls. Most have severe traumatic experiences. Some have lost their children, husbands, and other family members. Others have been victims of sexual harassment and, in some cases, even rape. It's difficult for anyone to heal from such events, but in hopes for a better future, some Rohingya women in the camp are learning meditation in order for them to recover. VOA's Moazem Sakil recently visited one of these sessions and filed this report narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
Mental health experts say meditation can help reduce stress, and that's exactly why these Rohingya refugee women are here. Having gone through severe and traumatic experiences, they're ready to move on.
On the way here from Myanmar, I experienced a lot of hardships. I had body aches everywhere, but after some mental exercise here, I feel better.
In addition to physical exercise and yoga-like meditation, the women also participate in other activities, like talking about their traumas and using art therapy to try to process their experiences.
This is my house. This is me. This is my child. Myanmar's army forces came and attacked us like this.
We have them use these meditations and exercises to overcome their depression. Here they do breathing exercises, partner exercises, and so on. The breathing exercises are very effective.
The project is organized by a non-government organization called Nauzwan, which means young hero in Bengali. The organization works to bring sustainable change in needed areas. For Moazem Shakil in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. A newly released documentary is giving voice to women who have survived civil war in Myanmar. The women are speaking out to show the devastation of war in hopes of achieving peace. VOA Burmese reporter Saul Tet filed this report from Burma. I Tan Sin narrates.
Women have paid a heavy price during the civil war in Myanmar. A new documentary commissioned by the Women's League of Burma exposes just how much women have suffered. And while the documentary may be hard to watch, in some ways, that's the point.
Civil war turns women and children into hostages. Women survivors in this documentary express their desire to have normalcy livelihood without skirmishes. In order to achieve sustainable peace, there must be ending of fighting among arms group in the country.
The documentary is called Urge, Voices of Women Survivors from Civil War. It features seven women from several different states, including women who live in refugee camps along the Thai-Burma border.
There are mothers who lost children, and there are women who lost husbands from both sides. They all have emotions. For example, wherever they may be, whether in mainland or remote ethnic areas, military wives who also live in mainland also suffer the bitterness of conflicts in ethnic areas. Women are vulnerable and hurt, no matter where they live. This is why we would like to highlight the vital role of women in conflict resolution.
And that's why the Women's League of Burma, which consists of 13 advocacy groups, including 11 ethnic organizations inside Burma, is demanding a ceasefire with the hope of putting an end to the pain and suffering showcased in the documentary. Lee Dan Sin, VOA News Burma.
Coming up, endangered species are being pushed to the brink. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia: an Indonesian woman held in Malaysia since 2017 on suspicions of assassinating the North Korean leader's half-brother was released from detention Monday. The Shah Alam High Court outside Kuala Lumpur discharged Siti Asia without an acquittal after Malaysian prosecutors withdrew the murder charge. Make your deliberations on top stories at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a recent study of the illegal wildlife trade shows that trafficking in endangered species is increasing in volume and value, and that's further fueling the global extinction crisis. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us more about the report, which shows that Hong Kong is increasingly becoming a center of that trade.
These black-spotted turtles are being kept at an animal rescue center on the outskirts of Hong Kong. They were smuggled into this region as part of what a new study says is a growing illegal wildlife trade operating out of Hong Kong.
In the last 20 years, the trade has become much more global. We were seeing a lot of animals from Southeast Asia coming through the rescue center, but now we see them from everywhere, from the Philippines, from Mexico, from the United States. The trade is clearly very global.
Gary Aides works at the Kaduri Farm. He says he sees proof that backs up the study, conducted by the Hong Kong Wildlife Trade Working Group.
Hong Kong is like a doorway to southern China and to other parts of Southeast Asia.
A lot of the contraband is what you're used to reading about. Elephants for their ivory tusks and rhino horns for their use in traditional medicine, as well as the scales of the armored pangolin. The study's authors say their report backs this up and aims to prove the problem is serious and growing.
We wanted to make sure this was represented in a database that the Hong Kong government could then access and see that this was organized and serious crime.
The Hong Kong government insists they are aggressively fighting smuggling, but the report's authors want to increase the criminal and financial penalties for not only smugglers, but the people behind the market.
That would mean that they would be able to freeze the assets of wildlife traffickers, that they would be able to forfeit those assets, and that they would be able to ensure that the persons behind the large syndicates that operate through Asia and onto other parts of the world are hurt in a way that would make an impact on their businesses.
According to the report, the number of endangered species being trafficked into Hong Kong has increased by 57% over the past decade, and the value of that trade has increased by over 1,600%. But some progress is being made. Last year, after China outlawed the sale of ivory, Hong Kong's legislature enacted a complete ban on their ivory trade. The ban is set to go into effect by 2021. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on great radio stations around Asia, like Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And if you happen to see the Faculty of Communication who run the radio station, tell them thanks. They're doing a great job. Also doing a great job for us is Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Nashwan Kali, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We wish you a great day ahead.